Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for this morning is Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletic Association against the Gannett Company and others. Mr. Dreps?
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Robert Dreps, and with my colleague Monica Santa Maria, I represent the newspapers, Gannett Company, Inc., and the Wisconsin Newspaper Association, in this case about equal treatment of the media under the First Amendment. Specifically, the newspapers challenge the monopoly control the Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletic Association exerts over Internet streaming coverage of high school athletic tournaments that it organizes for Wisconsin school children.
So I have a question for you right away. Would you be making the same argument if, for example, a high school decided to put on a production of the Rodgers and Hammerstein play South Pacific, and they invited the media to come in and see how the students were acting, report on it? Would you take the position that the media would have the right to stream the entire performance?
No, I don't think we could take that position because there are copyright issues involved in a case like that, because the play has copyright protection. The high school has to get a license in order to put on the performance.
Supposing some member of the faculty of the school had written the play and didn't copyright it.
If he didn't copyright it?
No copyright.
And he invited the media?
Yeah.
And there was not, if the school had no educational reason or other governmental purpose to say it was incompatible.
They're putting on the play.
Pardon me?
They're putting on the play written by one of their own.
I think that if the school allows one media company to transmit the performance in its entirety, it would have to allow equal access to others, subject only to reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions that are applied equally to all. If the school does not allow anyone to transmit the entire event, that would be a different analysis and may be justified if they had governmental reasons for drawing that distinction between partial or whole coverage.
Let's get away from that particular the problems that come with copyright from the source.
Right.
Suppose it's an opera that's in the public domain, okay, at a public university or a high school, and the interest is in the performance. Does the school have the ability to control who can record, stream, sell the recordings of that performance?
If there are not copyright protections in it, the author has given anybody that right to do that.
Not in the author's rights, but in the performance, a recording of the performance.
I believe that this would be allowed then. If nobody is claiming copyright protection, then it is in the public domain. And as long as the presence of the media equipment is not incompatible with the performance, if they invite the media in, they have to allow equal rights
to
do it.
So the school performers then have no rights to be able to control the recording and commercial distribution of their performance. Is that right?
I would not expect they would, no.
And so why is that?
Yeah.
Well, they are engaged in an educational activity, and they don't control how the school uses, they don't have rights greater than the school over how that educational activity
is
presented.
Who cares? Maybe it's the school, maybe it's a the choir or the theater company for the school?
Well, if I'm understanding your question correctly, the school is presenting the performance to the public. The school is inviting the news media in. In that circumstance, I don't think individual performers have the right to say the school can't do that.
But why doesn't the school have the right to say, we are going to record this performance in its entirety, and we will control its distribution, whether we want to distribute it ourselves or whether we want to delegate the distribution to one particular company?
Well, I think if the author claims that protection, the author can allow the school to do that exclusively.
Now, you know that these two things are not conflated because, for example, if there's something in the public domain, an opera, for instance, and the Chicago Symphony conducts a performance of that with its chorus, it might put out a CD of its performance, and at the same time, the San Francisco Symphony might put out its performance. So the performance is separately protectable from the rights in the underlying piece of work that's being performed. And so I think Judge Hamilton's question is, why not the same? He's stipulated an opera in the public domain. Why can't the holder of the performance right, probably the high school, control its distribution?
Well, I think we're in that circumstance, the performance right is protected by law. And here, the WIAA is not claiming some intellectual property protection in the performance. It's generally understood that athletic competitions are not copyrightable.
Well, see, here's a problem that I have with this case that's something that the parties didn't brief, but I'm going to put it out there. Initially, when this case was filed, it was filed as a declaratory judgment by the Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletic Association. These are very difficult to pronounce acronyms, WIAA. And it basically said, we have a right to control the distribution of these sporting events. And the media defendants came back, and they functionally defended against the right claimed an exclusivity on the basis of the First Amendment. So my first thought was Louisville and Nashville Railroad against Motley, a claim of state-created presentation, I'll call it, rights, met with a federal defense. And then the complaint was amended, and the amended complaint includes a provision, because there was some copyright floating around there. You were claiming that it was really implicitly, you know, artful pleading, and they were really trying to say copyright. But then the amended complaint says WIA's current policies regarding the Internet transmission don't violate the press rights under the First or 14th Amendments. And that still sounded like a federal defense to me. And then I looked at Zucchini against Scripps Howard, and in that case, which, as you'll recall, came up from the Ohio Supreme Court to the U.S. Supreme Court, you also have a claim of common law rights, publicity rights, performance rights, common law copyright that the state courts were recognizing. So all of this winds around to a question, why do we have jurisdiction here? Why did the district court have jurisdiction?
I believe the district court properly had jurisdiction because the original complaint sounded in copyright.
You said that, but I'm not sure it did. They didn't say a word about copyright. And indeed, as you well know, without registering a copyright, you can't sue for infringement. They were trying to say, we have a common law right over these athletic performances, and it was your defense that right had to yield to the First Amendment.
The rights they claimed were ownership of every image,
sure,
photograph, writing, depiction of
ownership
any kind
rights
about that event.
But they didn't say they didn't cite 106 of the Copyright Act. They didn't say that these were copyrights. And you're assuming an exclusivity under the copyright statute that I'm not sure Zucchini, for example, would support.
Well, I don't think Zucchini is directly relevant to that jurisdictional question because Zucchini involved common law copyrights and a claim of First Amendment infringement.
And I understand that. And my only what I gleaned from looking at Zucchini is that there is such a thing as common law copyrights. They probably arise under state law. There are all sorts of state-based intellectual property rights, as you know.
There are indeed. Zucchini, I think, strictly speaking, is privacy and not intellectual property.
Well, that's the holding, but the court along the way seems to note, and of course one could look into this more rigorously, but you won't deny that when WIA started this case and even when it continued this case, it did not say we have a copyright in the performance of the high school tournament football games or whatever else they were, all these different kinds of games, and it was you who brought the federal question into the case.
That is true, and we did that because the broad rights they claimed were subsumed within the exclusive province of the Copyright Act. That was
so
our understanding.
It's a preemption theory of a field preemption theory of jurisdiction?
They were asking the state court to find that they owned all of the right to protect any depiction, mm-hmm. any use, any writing about that event. And that claim of right sounds in the copyright arena that only the federal courts have jurisdiction over. A state court can't grant that right. As it turns out, it isn't a recognized right under the Copyright Act either,
but it
does sound in copyright law.
Well, that was your theory, certainly. I actually would like to have the parties file supplemental briefs on this jurisdictional question, both sides, and I think you can just file them simultaneously. We can give them 14 days under the new system of counting days that we now have. that was, rather than take all of your time on this point, it's a point of concern to me, and I would appreciate getting those briefs filed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. We will certainly do that.
So now I want to take you back to Zucchini, though, because what Zucchini certainly holds is that there is no right to broadcast the entirety of somebody's performance. Now, Mr. Zucchini, the human cannonball, had a much briefer performance than a basketball or a football game, but the court says the entire performance is something different from observing, reporting on, talking about, clips of, and all the rest of that. So why doesn't Zucchini control and for that reason suggest that the district court was right?
I believe because Zucchini involves a private actor's right of publicity.
Why is that important?
Well, because the WIAA is the government. It is not a private actor. And the school children who participate in its athletic tournaments are not performers. They're engaged in their educational activity.
But you wouldn't say, if one of your reporters was walking down the street and saw somebody out in the public doing something, that reporter couldn't pull out a camera, film it, and put it on the evening television show, even though it was a private party who was doing the thing. I mean, it's a media right that you're talking about. It's not who's putting on the performance. You're focusing on the media's right to stream that which it sees legitimately.
Well, I think that's right. Somebody who
that's the same thing Zucchini was about. The media were lawfully there. Yes, Mr. Zucchini was private, but they were, just as in your case, this case is not about getting credentials to the press box for these football games, as I understand it.
No, it is not.
Everybody's fine with that. It's once you're in the box, you're there, you can watch the game, you can film the entire game if you want to, as long as you don't stream it. So you can decide later on which are the highlights.
Right. The difference is that the government is allowing one party to do what it won't allow other parties to do.
But the government does that all the time. The government, for example, gives an exclusive franchise for cable TV companies to serve a particular area. The government gives exclusive rights to the garbage firm. They contract with private entities all the time, and I'm not familiar with any rule that says that government actors are not entitled to let exclusive licenses over property and things that they wish to have handled.
But I think the difference is that there were physical scarcity problems that justified exclusive rights to wire an entire community for cable.
Not anymore.
That's
for garbage
true.
Companies?
But that's how it arose historically.
That doesn't answer the garbage company.
No, but the garbage company doesn't have expressive rights under the First Amendment. The press right to cover government activities is fundamental, and it's protected by the Constitution. the right of somebody to provide services to the city isn't comparable.
So, of course, this court is violating the First Amendment right now, aren't we? Because the press is here, and we don't let people video and stream our proceedings.
That is not our position at all. And
I don't know how you distinguish it, though. I know you don't want to say that.
The difference is that you're not allowing one company to do it. You're not selling an exclusive franchise to somebody to do it in order to raise money to support the court system. The court system does need revenue, like any other government operation, and it tries to run on user fees, but it can't.
No, it doesn't. It runs on appropriations from Congress.
Well, there are substantial fees paid that supplement the court's operations.
They don't come close.
Well, okay. my point is that it would be a different analysis if the WIAA allowed nobody to stream their events.
But you see, I mean, this case seems to me entirely about characterization. If the events are functionally a property right or an item of commerce, as the district court put it, then you go down the path of saying, just like any other property that the government has, it can give out exclusive rights with respect to that. It can try to make it self-sustaining. If it's really about restricting information, then, of course, the First Amendment has something to do with it. But I'm having a hard time figuring out what information about these events is actually restricted, given the fact that you concede that there are no problems with credentialing, given the fact that you concede that you can film the entire thing and pick out the highlights. You can blog contemporaneously. You can criticize. You can say that a coach was abusive and show that film clip. I mean, I'm having a lot of trouble seeing why you have a right to broadcast the whole thing. I mean, I'm thinking of examples of, again, getting back to the high schools and their arts programs. You know, the band will put on a concert and they will give the right to sell CDs to somebody because it helps sustain the band program. It's exactly the same thing.
I think
also would like, while I'm at it, for you to tell me whether you think that the amicus brief filed by the University of Wisconsin Board of Regents is correct to assume that should we agree with you, then all public universities in this country will have to shut down their media contracts for their football programs.
Well, I don't think that's correct.
So what's the distinction?
Well, we don't have sufficient facts in front of from that brief alone, and nor from the expert opinion that the WIAA submitted from a faculty member at the UW.
I can tell you a lot of public universities around the country have private contracts to broadcast their, you know, interesting games, shall we say, football, basketball, maybe baseball, whatever.
I know that's true. There are certainly distinctions. They're not school children. They're not funded.
Why does that matter? You were emphasizing the state, and there are certainly state actors.
They are state actors, which is what brings the First Amendment into play, but they are also public events in the sense that they're supported and sponsored and paid for by the whole community.
And so you said that the high school events are too.
I agree they are.
Texas? You have no idea.
Well, I was thinking Indiana basketball, high school basketball. But
in the University of Wisconsin, at least at Madison, the athletic program is entirely funded from receipts of their games, from ticket admission.
Including their media.
Including their valuable media contracts. That's right.
Big dollars.
That's right. And I understand that.
So the answer can depend. The answer cannot depend on the financial success of the program, can it?
No, I don't think it depends on how much money can be made by selling the right to cover the event. If it's a small amount or a large amount, it doesn't matter for constitutional purposes. The university system is different in a number of ways. Many of those rights, as I understand it, are licensed through the league organization, the Big Ten in the case of Madison, and it operates in multiple states, so it would not be a state actor under the analysis of Tarkanian.
I'm not sure that's correct.
You want to ask about that or show?
Go ahead.
The problem I have with that is that many of the actors, I believe 11 of the 12 schools in the Big Ten now, are public universities. And surely you would not say that they can avoid your client's claims simply by creating a, quote, private entity, by privatizing the negotiation and contracting of the rights. Does that solve the problem that easily?
It is a certainly a factor in how they operate, and it's the...
But does that solve the problem? Because I guarantee you, if that's all that's necessary, WIAA will disband tomorrow, and they will simply reconstitute as a private entity.
It is a private entity today. The reason it's a state actor is because it operates in only one state.
And what?
That's crazy.
No. It functions.
That's not the answer. So.
It is contracted out. It is the public schools of Wisconsin contracting with a private entity to run their sports programs. That's why it stands in the shoes of the public school districts of Wisconsin.
Mr. Drapps, let me ask you a slightly different question here. First, the focus here is about live streaming on the Internet, right?
Yes.
Okay, but would you agree that your theory would also apply to television, radio broadcasts, and delayed playing of the games?
Absolutely.
Okay. One other question that I wanted to raise with you while we still have time. If your client has a First Amendment right to stream or to broadcast live the state high school finals, for example, in football, are they also free to sell any kind of advertising they want?
Not any kind of advertising they want. They are subject to the reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions that the WIAA places on all media for the purpose of protecting the school children. They can't sell beer ads with their coverage.
Why not?
Because that is a justifiable...
Does that apply during the news, during the sports portions of the news broadcasts when they do the highlights of the game?
No, it does not attach that.
Okay.
Because it is not exclusive to that programming. The focus of the news program is not solely the school children. When you invite an audience to watch solely a performance of school children, we're not objecting to the restriction WIAA places on putting beer ads in association with that kind of event.
That's next year. Right? Next year's case if you win. Right?
I don't think that's the case because that has a legitimate educational reason. Raising revenue is their only reason for these other restrictions. And we think it fundamental that the First Amendment does not allow the government to ration and sell speech rights over
proceedings. Can you direct us to any case that has held a government exclusive contract unconstitutional on this kind of theory?
I can't point you to any case that involves a government exclusive contract restricting speech at all.
Except the cable TV example, which you...
Or how about the exclusive photography at the college graduation?
The cable TV example involved physical constraints on letting multiple people wire a city.
I understand that's your theory. What about Judge Hamilton's?
The photographer at the university was given an exclusive contract because the university tried without success to get people to come and photograph their graduation ceremonies.
Okay.
But in high school graduations, the same thing happens.
If that's your reasoning, how do you respond to the plaintiff's arguments that this bundled exclusive contract for all the sports is the only way they can get coverage beyond football and basketball and, I don't know, maybe hockey, but the way they get the cross-country tournament or the volleyball tournament covered?
Well, the record doesn't show that actually happens. That's a goal. But the fact is very, very few events are streamed by anybody. And that does show that their current system cherry-picks just as much as they claim the newspapers would if they came in. The difference is that the Wisconsin Newspaper Association has members all over the state. They want to follow their local schools. And the WIAA is interfering with their ability to do that when they get to the tournament level by giving those rights exclusively
right.
to one company that doesn't share
are, in
that.
In fact, as you agree, more valuable. There's a huge antitrust literature about why exclusive licensing is a more valuable way of going. I'm just going to suggest if you're almost out of your rebuttal time, if you want to save just a breath, maybe you would
like to do that. Thank you.
Okay, I'll give him a minute on rebuttal. Mr. Skilton.
May it please the Court, John Skilton. I'm representing WIAA and When We Were Young. I had an outline of remarks. I think the Court has traversed most of the concerns that I wanted to get to. The district judge carefully applied a forum analysis and came to the conclusion that this was a non-public forum. I think his analysis is consistent with Supreme Court cases.
Is it? I mean, can you explain to me further what was, in fact, WIAA's theory of property rights to begin with when it filed, actually throughout, when it first filed the action in state court and then when it filed the amended complaint?
Your Honor, we didn't litigate that directly in
this court. But somebody drafted the complaint.
But it's essentially a property theory, a common law ownership. All of the accoutrements of ownership are obtained. The government has the right to own property and to control it. We charge admission to these events. We rent the stadia or the locations for that. We do what a property owner does, and it's perfectly proper for a government to do it. And our position is that we can control that event appropriately, but consistent with the First Amendment.
And are those rights, Mr. Skilton, only rights that arise under state law?
Well, in this case, they do arise under state law. It is a, after all, we're dealing with property and events and occurrences in the state of Wisconsin. That was not the seminal issue that we chose to litigate. As the court has pointed out, it was originally brought as a declaratory judgment in state court with copyright claims asserted, et cetera, and then it was removed by the defendants. The DJ defendants, and we amended the complaint to focus on what we thought were appropriately live and real federal questions, and that is to say the allegations that have been made that we were violating the First Amendment. So the amended complaint focused the court on the issue that we chose to litigate affirmatively in the amended complaint, and that is the First Amendment case. We will brief the issue, Your Honor. The court has rightly requested us to do it. But from the point of view of the plaintiff, it is our position that we did, in fact, properly preserve, maintain, and plead a First Amendment as under the amended complaint.
So maybe you can help me think about at what point one would get into forum analysis here, because we don't normally think about forum analysis if we're deciding, for example, who gets to take advantage of a city's recycling facility or, in other words, various access to government property. So how does forum analysis come in here?
First of all, I'm going to go to the Illinois Dunesland case and say that I'm going to break out of forum analysis pretty quickly for the reasons that Judge Posner suggested we ought to. But it is, given the nature of the claim, First Amendment claim, and as that claim and those kinds of claims have been analyzed structurally by the United States Supreme Court, what the district court did, and properly so at the invitation of the parties, was to apply First Amendment law through forum analysis to overlay on these facts to determine whether there are any First Amendment implications to the scheme that's being challenged. So my first answer to you is that that is the structure of analysis when these kinds of claims are made, First Amendment violations, that is suggested to the courts under the series of Supreme Court cases. And so I'd say that's the proper structure to look at, the allegation that we are violating the First Amendment.
Okay. Well, as I understand the media arguments, I think there might be two layers of argument. One of them seems to be, once you decide to let them in at all, once you've given them the credentials and they're lawfully there at the event, you don't have the right to tell them, in a sense, to pre-censor, if you will, what they can do, ranging all the way from the complete internet stream all the way down to 1 minute of coverage if it happens to be a really boring game on the evening news. And so that would be one level. The other level that I understand is, okay, maybe you can restrict the transmission of the entire performance or the entire game, as long as you do it even-handedly. But if you decide to single out one entity for broader rights, at that point you've overstepped some boundary. So maybe you could address both of those.
It's they're intertwined. My first answer goes to the question of can you discriminate at all, and the answer to that is yes, it's a private forum. The government's purpose is to have a sporting event consistent with that. It wants to exploit that in all possible ways for revenue. One of the ways is internet streaming. Other ways the court has alluded to, broadcasting, television, et cetera. They're all in the same package. A second layer to the answer is that it's not discriminating in the first instance by this program. It's an exclusive license. So we're talking about those games that are not chosen to be broadcast by W when we were young. And so the first instance, the first question is, do we have the right to do that at all? And the court, I think, implicitly answered its question by saying, tell me why that's not true. The government does this historically in many contexts, and this is simply another such context. And it's also consistent with the notion that this is a limited forum. You can't let everybody in to podcast or broadcast. You don't have the room for the cameras. The district court noted the fact that this was a selective forum, and et cetera, in any event. When We Were Young is not in the same boat as the press here. It is a producer. It provides services. It permits us to work with athletic contests across the board, some of which are not profitable, some of which would not be broadcast at all but for the contract with our exclusive licensee. So we get to the last question. So once you let the press in, do they get to do everything? And my answer to that is I think that it's pretty good jurisprudential law that the First Amendment is not unlimited in its range, and it is a gradation here. You mentioned the Zucchini case, and there's a couple of cases the district court relies on. The key parts of the opinion are pages 38 through 40, and it cites in those cases, in those portions, some of the key cases that I'm alluding to. But the notion is that, and Zucchini brings it out, is that there are distinctions. There may be some First Amendment implication per se to broadcasting, but the court pointed out that the full panoply of core political, ideological, expressive First Amendment rights, those were words that Judge Conley used. I like those words for other reasons, but are afforded.
Well, he said that, but I had to take some exception with some of the things that he said about, if you will, the importance or significance of sports as a public topic versus more high-minded things, you know, maybe whether we should have a democracy or any number of issues that people debate. I mean, the truth is, as the media points out, sports are meticulously followed by a great number of people, and I don't think that we can draw any distinction about whether sports deserve media coverage or not.
And that isn't the argument I'm making. I think the court actually put its finger on it, that the reporting, the news gathering as it relates to the public interest, let's call it that, as distinct from public significance, public interest in the event, is unrestrained in any meaningful sense. They have the 2 minutes. They can record the entire event. They can pick what's important to them. They can criticize the coach. If the bleachers fall, they'll get unlimited reporting. That's a real news event, not just a sports event. What we're talking about is, I think the court characterized it essentially as free riding on the product that's been produced at this event by the government, which it has chosen to, in a limited forum context, to exploit for revenues to support programs across the board. It's not a perfect, clean issue, but none of these cases are.
Help us draw some lines out here, Mr. Steele. Let me. I think we follow that argument, but let me pick a fairly extreme example for you. The federal government is facing extraordinary deficits at this point. Let's suppose the president elect in 2013 decides to work out an exclusive contract for live coverage of his inauguration or her inauguration. Maybe it's with Fox, maybe it's with MSNBC, might depend on who won. Would there be a problem with that? Coverage would be allowed. Everybody else could film it, could do highlights, but only one network could do the live coverage.
You know, Your Honor, Judge Hamilton, as you put it, I have a continuum of things that there are problems with versus there are not. This is in the nature, and I'm sorry I can't get right to the case, but this is in the nature of a truly public event that is in the middle of speech and political discourse.
It's a core government function.
It's a core event. Speech issue.
Mm-hmm.
My answer might be different for that than it is for this case.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the word you used a minute ago is the key word. You said that the high schools are producing a product, which is this tournament playoff. It's an entertainment product. We all actually understand that, whereas the inauguration...
The high schools are also entertaining.
they try to make it entertaining, that's true, but it's also a constitutional event.
Entertainment.
But anyway... should we uphold the district court, these lines are going to be very important because the press has protection under the First Amendment. Anything that tells the press we're going to dictate what you can do and what you can't do once you have lawfully gained access to an event is a serious matter.
The court is rightly concerned coming and going on this issue as it relates to both parties. And it seems to me, therefore, you're going to strike on what is the heart of the real issue that this case focuses on. And I think it's, again, I said I was going to get there, and I'm now on the Illinois Dunesland case. And the question is there any part of this system, of these protocols, of these rules that really are fairly subject to stifling speech? Is that what this is all about? And I think the answer to that question, and this is why I said I referred the court to that part of the district court's decision, is there isn't that kind of censorship issue that's inherent in any of these rules. Mr. Dreps conceded, for example. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Who's the speaker in a complete performance internet transmission? Is it the players, or is it the retransmitter? I certainly have no trouble seeing who's the speaker if somebody's saying, you know, Coach X has done a great job with the team this year, or Player Y, got a 3-point basket, or whatever.
Yeah, sort of what Zucchini in those cases are talking about. This is a rote recording of an event. There isn't much judgment. There's no really editorial judgment. Yeah, you could say you can hit the 2 points on the stance rather than the back of a player, but this isn't the kind of differential that this court need concern itself about in the context of stifling speech. This is a rote recording. Those aspects that relate to what's important about that picture or about that film are fully left to the judgment and reporting of the press. They are unfettered in their use of the game for purposes of reporting on whatever newsworthy event they deem to be important here. I am not suggesting that, per se, a sports event has no newsworthy potential. That's not true. I don't believe that. But that's not what's happening.
They can update like the New York Times does with various games. You know, you can pop on the website every 3 or 4 minutes and get the latest from the Bears game.
Again, they have 2 minutes in any event under our rules. And
2 minutes is surely not a constitutional rule, though, right?
No, but it's a practical rule.
Let me ask you, I guess, another practical question about that may be more realistic than my concern
about the Gettysburg Address, by the way, I think was told was less than 2 minutes.
It's been a while since presidential speeches have been that short. But let's go to proud parents of the star player in the state football championship who videotape the entire game.
No commercial use.
And decide to put Junior's performance on the Internet.
Well, the rules tend to they specifically speak to the point of that kind of thing. It relates some in part to the camera, to no commercial use issue.
Okay.
And
you say YouTube isn't commercial use? They post it up on YouTube?
Certainly not intended by the parents, these parents. Now, if these parents got into the business of selling this and putting advertising with it, then the rules that are in place would tend to impact on that.
At that point, your clients would be concerned.
And because, you know, this isn't part of commercial rule, this is intended to permit the WIA to maximize the value of the forum that it's created, and it's consistent with that forum and its purpose, which is to attempt to be able to put on these games and to exploit the revenue potential and to spread it around and send it back to the schools or help the program as a whole. And you pointed out, Judge Hamilton, that it's not a matter whether they did the best job or it's really profitable or not, but that's the purpose of it. And I would fully submit that that's consistent with a non-public forum analysis, and that any First Amendment rights, which are clearly important to this court and are in play in this case, are properly honored and respected with the rules that are in place, with full reporting on anything that matters. So my suggestion to the court is that these are arguments that are spun on hypotheticals. Judge Conley, in the end, said, look, if you've really got a First Amendment beef here, bring it back on an as-applied basis, but don't spin things at me that don't amount to a serious risk of First Amendment violation, which I think is Judge Cudahy's pronouncement, basically, in the Madison amplifying case. And that is our response on the question of discretion and the like. We don't have, in the context of rules designed to promote the forum and to protect the participants who are minors, we don't have the kind of implication of First Amendment concerns that should rise to the level of this court's concern if, in fact, there were such implications. My point would be there are none.
So is the record absolutely clear, or is it an uncontested fact that the price, if you will, of the license that you give to When We Were Young Productions, from your point of view, you get a better payment, in not just dollars, but services as well, when it's exclusive than you would get if it were non-exclusive?
That is certainly for the reason the court articulated. That is almost a subject to judicial notice, and Judge Conley said as much, but the record would support that with the affidavits of Todd Clark, for example, and Tim Icor, should the court look for what it is. And I'd also say to the court, as a matter of perspective, and to get the concept that I'm trying to articulate on the issue of First Amendment not being absolute and the real world accommodating real facts, the affidavit of James Hoyt is on this record, fully in this record to the court, And his experience was that of both a media person and someone who worked on the athletic board at the University of Wisconsin. So he brings to this court, and he brought to the district court, a wealth of practical experience on accommodation of these different means of communication versus the real interests and the proper interests of the press in reporting and news gathering. And I request the court, if it gets into this issue, to look at that declaration, because here's a classic expert who really has something to contribute to the court. He's been there on issues that are important to him and important to the court. So I suggest that this system as a whole strikes the proper balance. It permits us to do what the forum is all about without destroying First Amendment rights or access to the press.
And so let me ask you this question. It's going to sound a little strange, but is it your understanding that if somebody copyrights something, the First Amendment no longer applies?
You are asking me a question that I have not looked at.
The only reason I say that is that it seems odd to me to think that if something is copyrighted, then it's okay and consistent with the First Amendment to tell somebody you can't reproduce the entire thing. Everybody seems to agree, of course, that the copyright law, and indeed the Supreme Court has found that the copyright laws are consistent with the Constitution. But I'm just musing that there's probably a reason why there's fair use, there's the ability to comment on a play that you just saw, you can publish a review of an opera that was just produced, you can do the kind of reporting that the media is doing in these interscholastic competitions, and that's all consistent with the First Amendment. But as Zucchini suggests, when the entire performance is there, that becomes something different. That's a product.
Well, and the court has outlined the issue. My guess is if you ask the media on issues of copyright and First Amendment, they might even have a different answer than they do in this particular question. But that said, I think that Zucchini strikes the best answer I can give with respect to this fact scenario. Those 15 seconds, interesting distinction in Zucchini, I think, that wasn't mentioned. Zucchini focused on the use by the media and found that to be instructive in terms of whether or not the First Amendment was implicated. And as I understood the opinion in Zucchini, it is that if the media takes it wholesale, whole hog, and tries to exploit it for commercial use, then don't come around and say it's a First Amendment issue. You're not in any way being prevented from reporting on this. In fact, you did use it, and in 15 seconds, you can play that on the 6 o'clock news. This is not, unfortunately, these aren't 15-second productions that we're talking about. But bottom line, Your Honor, is that the court has probed the issues that I was going to address. Otherwise, and unless the court does have some additional questions for me, I completed with my presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. As I said, I'll give you a minute more, Mr. Dreps. I know you have to pack a certain amount into that.
Thank you, Judge. I think it a bit surprising that the WIAA's position has shifted in this case. It brought this case and argued it had the constitutional right to do what it did on public forum analysis grounds. It could find no precedent whatsoever for the government even to apply public forum analysis to the news media covering a government event.
I don't see how this is a public forum if you agree that the credentialing process, they don't let just anybody in.
They let any qualified media in.
Right, so
it's not a public forum for the public.
Isn't it?
It's what the court has used various terms to describe, but it's a forum created for a specified purpose. It invites a class of people.
At most, it's a limited forum, and it might be a non-public.
The argument has shifted today to Zucchini. They did not defend on that ground or advocate on that ground in the district court. Zucchini is easily distinguished because it was a private performer. There is no analogy to a government performance like this. It's not the same case. The right of publicity has not been developed to the point where any court, to my knowledge, has said the government holds that right of publicity and can sell it. California probably has the strongest and best developed law on rights of publicity, and they have a strict First Amendment exception, or First Amendment-based exception, for contemporary news reporting of events like that. There's a case pending there right now.
But it's your position that reporting and streaming are synonyms.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm
news coverage is evolving. News coverage is evolving. In the past, it was difficult to put a whole performance on the air. 15 seconds was possible because it was a very short news program, et cetera.
So this
the Internet
kind of
has opened up everything.
The destruction of private rights in performances is actually what you're advocating.
We are not talking about private rights in performances. We are here to
talk
about
the
government's rights.
The government, you know, of course, the whole line of Supreme Court cases dealing with the government as participant in the market. So anytime governments participate in the market, your position is they can't have private rights.
No, my position is that the government cannot enter the speech market and exclude others. There are a lot of businesses the government can engage in, but licensing and rationing speech for profit is not one of them.
But they're not in the speech market. They're in the high school football game market.
They are selling and profiting exclusive rights to report these events in their entirety.
If forget the contract with When We Were Young Productions, could WIAA simply have its own employees and its own equipment to do this exclusively?
I don't think they could, because once they concede it's compatible with press coverage, with the event, it interferes with no governmental interest, if they're doing that for educational reasons and they can justify it on that ground, that's different. If they're doing it solely for money, I don't think they can, no.
Okay, I think we have your position.
I would like to note that we didn't spend any time at all on the unbridled discretion doctrine. Even if the government is allowed to grant exclusivity, it is not allowed to license with unbridled discretion. And that's undeniably what they have done here. They've done it explicitly. They literally refuse to adopt standards. As this case has been pending for 2 years, they still assert sole discretion over everything. WWY only streams 4% of the events it has a right to. All the rest are available for license without any standards.
We will turn to your briefs for the rest of that and certainly take the point that you are still stressing it.
Thank you
very much. Thanks to all counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.